This is John Fuller, and please remember to let us know how you're listening to these programs on a podcast, app, or website.
All a parent has to do in any way that's genuine for them is just to make an effort to connect with their kids, whatever that is. And the kids know, hey, mom and dad is spending some time with me or doing this thing with me. Why? Well, one reason only, because they love me. They want to connect with me.
Dr. Todd Cartmell is with us today, and you'll hear more from him about parenting. This is Focus on the Family with your host, Focus President and author Jim Daly. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Fuller.
As parents, we all want to maintain a healthy relationship with our kids that is built on trust, respect, and love. But sometimes it can be hard to know how to do that, especially when our kids are misbehaving or make poor choices and we get frustrated. Do you ever get frustrated?
I like the way you said that, frustrated.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been there.
And here's a painful realization. Sometimes our kids' behavior is a result of them following our example. So today we want to empower you as the parents to relate to your kids, even in the midst of misbehavior, through how you talk to them, connect with them, encourage them, and lead them.
And Dr. Cartmell is a clinical child psychologist. He's written a number of books, including 8 Simple Tools for Raising Great Kids. And he and his wife, Laura, live in the Chicago area. They have 2 grown sons. When we had him here last time, Jim, we talked about kids being like dump trucks.
Yeah, that was good.
The importance of your words, which have power, avoiding the dirt watcher phase of parenting.
These are too complicated.
And being flexible in thinking. That's some of the content we covered. That's a free download, by the way. You can get that at focusonthefamily.com/radio.
Todd, welcome back to Focus.
Hey, Jim. John, good to see you guys.
It was really good last time, and we're not going to be able to explain those things that we covered. I'd get the free download.
I don't know if I can explain them.
No, I know you can, but we don't want to take time because we want to cover some of the other content from your great book, 8 Simple Tools for Raising Great Kids. Now, I got to press you a little bit right from the get-go. Is it really that formulaic?
8 Simple Tools? Well,
I mean, just parenting in general.
Oh, gotcha.
Can you say,
gotcha,
if I apply these 8 principles, I'm going to have great kids? It's a good title. Gives me a lot of hope. But come on, does it really work that
well,
way?
Well, it's sure going to increase your odds. That's
for
sure.
The point. I like that. Because there's nothing that's foolproof like that. These are ideas and steps you can take to enhance your relationship with your child. And the irony is, that's the key. Having a good, healthy relationship with your child is what will make the difference.
Yeah, it starts with that. You know, when I think about the 8 tools in this book, you know, I thought about it. If I could have made a 6 tools, I would have made a shorter book, I guess. But you know, there's not one of those 8 tools I can think that you can do without. I really can't.
Yeah.
And but yeah, it starts. You know, you're gonna have a hard time, for instance, teaching your kids if you don't have a strong relationship. So that's right. That's where it starts.
Well, we're gonna cover some of that today. Todd, you are a clinical child psychologist for 20 years, so you've seen many people come through your door.
I have.
And so the obvious first question is, what's the most common piece of advice you have to give the parents that come in?
Most common piece of advice probably is that no matter what they're working on, what behavior, what situation, is they not just to wing it, but to come up with a plan, you know, to put together a plan, have something, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated, but, you know, a plan for what you're going to teach them, how you're going to help that behavior to maintain. A lot of times it's, you know, taking a bad habit and trying to switch it out with a good habit. Well, you know, how are you going to do that? You know, okay, so coming up with some kind of a plan that, you know, that will work.
Now, that sounds complicated. What does a plan typically look like?
All
just
right.
Pick a behavioral problem and
talk
to me like you're counseling me about my kid's problem.
Sure. Well, I'll make it super easy. Let's say the problem was, you know, some kind of arguing about whatever, homework or going to bed or turn off electric, you know, anything. The plan, here's an easy way to think of the plan, to remember it. Teach, turn on, turn off.
That's easy.
Yep, that's easy.
So what is teach?
Teach means you know what you want your kids to stop. You figure out what you want them to start. And you define that in terms of there's only 3 categories, actually. It could be something you want them to think differently or say differently or do differently. It's always going to be a combination of one or more of those. So let's just say if a kid's arguing about something, well, maybe in that situation, you want your kid to talk differently or to maybe make a different action. So you come up with some, and you can talk with your kid about it. You can come up with a plan together. But you figure out, well, in this situation, when it's time to turn off the Xbox. You know, here's what you can think. Here's what you could say. Here's what you could do. This would work great. So you come up with a simple plan. And like we talked about last time, you practice the plan. If a kid wants to get good at soccer, you don't say, well, here, there's a soccer ball. Here's what it looks like. And, you know, theoretically, here's a picture of a soccer ball. And you would kick it with your foot. That's what you would do. No, you go out there and you're going to play soccer. You're going to practice it. So you come up with a little simple plan. This is the teaching. Not complicated. Very simple. Maybe say, okay, mom, and just do it. You know, I mean, you know, it can be as simple as that. But then you're going to practice it. You're going to role play it together. That's the teaching. Yeah. Because we want this plan to become a habit, a new habit, to take place of their old, not listening good
habit. So are you saying that you're going to go down to the basement and I'm going to holler at you, it's time to turn it off, and you'll say, yes, mom.
You create the plan before. Yeah. That's what I'm
hearing. You create the plan, but yeah, I mean,
but practice
totally, 100%. That's exactly what you do.
Wow.
I mean, no joke, exactly. Yeah. I do this in my office all day long. Literally, we practice it. We role play it. It's really fun. You make it fun. But yeah, we're trying to get the new set of behaviors in place.
Well, and for a defiant child, I mean, which many are, you know, they're stretching their wings. They may be 14, 15, right in that age when they're trying to get a little separation from you. This isn't abnormal, but you don't want that defiance to linger. And, you know, it's funny how we as parents, we don't think of just asking them, okay, I'm obviously not communicating very well when I need something done, when you need to get off the gaming console, whatever it is, Xbox, whatever.
Yeah.
So how can I get that point across to you in a way that's going to be effective and it doesn't end up in us arguing about it?
No. Well, that's nice. I mean, that's even a little different approach. Say you're talking about your relationship, your communication style, which I'm sure we're going to get to. But for a plan for what your kid is going to do, and for an older kid, sometimes you're not so much role-playing it like that. That may be a touch younger. For an older kid, a lot of times you're working on how can they think in a way that's helpful to them in that situation. But either way, so you come up with some kind of plan, you kind of go over it. The second step, the turn-on step, is you want that plan to turn into reality. You want it to become a new habit.
Again, turn on in their minds.
Yeah. And so you want to encourage that plan. When they do that, you want to be watching for it. You want to be encouraging. You want to say, hey, pal, that was awesome what you did. You want to be touching them. You want to be making – we want them to think this plan that you all just came up with is the best thing ever happened to them. And because when they think that, they will want to do it more.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So that's the turning on. Then, of course, the turning off is when they do the old plan, when they're behaving, you know, poorly, you respond in such a way to help them come to the conclusion that wasn't the best choice. That wasn't that. I don't really want to do that anymore. So teach, turn on, turn off. That would be a simple idea, a simple formula for how you kind of tackle a problem behavior. But that's what most people do is they just do the turn off. They don't do the teach. They don't do the turn on. They just tackle the turn off. Hey, you just did this thing, so now here's the trouble you're in. Mm. And that's, you know, that's one third of the plan.
And the difficulty in that is you stay in that cycle then. As a parent, you're always having them turn off the behavior you don't appreciate.
Yeah, and it's
so
not
just
turning
stuck
off
there.
Very well. Yeah, you're stuck there because you're not identifying and helping them improve their skill for how to handle it well, smartly, respectfully, and you're not helping them learn that, and then you're not actively encouraging and strengthening that new behavior.
Todd, I'm thinking of the parents who, let's just go age and stage, because I'm sure that defiance is different at 3 and 8 compared to 13 and maybe even 17, when you're at the end of the road. So just hit real quick, kind of age-appropriate ways of turning off and turning on. Start young.
Yeah, sure. Well, for the actually, it's interesting. Some of it's going to be very similar for the turning on. for a younger kid, the part that's going to be the same, really, almost no matter what the age, will be the relationship stuff, the encouraging, the pointing out the positive behaviors, the pointing out the positive traits underneath the behaviors, the physical touch. Those are huge. Those are in psych language. Those are called social rewards. But they're powerful habit builders, relationship builders, and you do that with a 3-year-old. You do that with a 17-year-old. Heck, you do that with your husband, spouse,
Right. So hopefully.
Yeah, ideally. So that one doesn't stop. For the younger kids, you might periodically use a little point system or some chips or some kind of reward thing. I kind of think about that as like jumping a car. You got a dead battery. You're going to put a little extra juice on for a while, but then you don't need the juice after a while. You pull the jumper cables off. But what keeps that car battery running is the alternator, and that's the encouragement. That's the pour-it-ons.
Okay.
That's the verbals. So you have some of those little reward systems for the younger kids, and as you get older, Well, you don't have to necessarily reward systems for the older kids, but, you know, there are rewards, there are privileges, and those are linked to the respectful behavior. Mm-hmm. This is what in some of my stuff I've called the respect-privilege connection, like circles. You guys can see me had circles with my fingers here. If your respect circle is high, well, your privilege circle just gets connected to your respect circle. So if the only way in this universe your privilege circle is going high is if your respect circle takes it high. If your respect circle goes low, your privilege circle doesn't free float up here, it stays connected. So your privileges, if you're a 14, 15-year-old, if you're a 17-year-old, and you want to be, you know, driving a car, you want to be playing Xbox or whatnot, there's no way in this universe that that's happening unless your respectful behavior is pulling it up. Huh. So you don't have a point system necessarily, but you still have the same principle.
And it's important to link that the teenager's yes. mind to understand it. The way
huge.
You just did. You need That's to explain right. it. I think sometimes as parents we tend to act in the way yeah. we want to act that yeah. way, but we don't tell them yeah. why they're losing privileges.
Sure.
You know why.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
not a good question either.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't.
yeah. right. What was disrespectful about that?
right. Exactly.
Right. Well, that gets back to the teaching part and to the relationship part. I mean, yeah. you're not trying to, just whack them out of the blue with privilege losses. You don't want them. You don't want them to lose anything. You want them to be doing great, and you want to help them do that.
Yeah, that's key. Here's the question perhaps of the entire program.
All right.
I love this. How can we get our kids to listen to us?
Well, okay,
mom and dad, everybody just leaned in. Yeah. Here it is, okay, the golden question.
Well, do you mean listen as in obey or listen as in be open to what we have to say?
Probably yes and yes.
Okay, okay. Well, I just tackled the listen, obey part a little bit just in that yes. three-step plan, the teaching, turning on, turning off. That's how you get kind of good habits of what I call fast listening or slow listening, you know, that kind of thing. Relationship-wise, it's even a step bigger. I'm a dad. You guys are dads. I have two boys. I desperately want my boys to listen to me. I don't mean in the obey sense. I mean in the relationship
yeah.
sense. I want them not. To, actually, I'll rephrase it. I want them to want to listen to mm-hmm. me.
Mm.
And, you know, I really do. I always have. And so I think about me, like if I can do a picture, like I'm over here, there's a gulf between us. It's almost like the salvation picture, just different. And then there's a bridge between us. I'm here, there, and there's a bridge. And that bridge is our relationship. And if our relationship bridge is strong, well, then they're going to want to hear what I have to say. But if I'm damaging the bridge by how I talk, by how I act, well, then they're going to see dad coming and go, oh, gosh, put up the gate, you know, get away. And, you know, that's the last thing I would ever want. So when you think about it like that, when I think about it like that, then that flavors everything I do, every conversation I have. I want to talk to my kids. I want to act to my kids in a way that strengthens the bridge, that builds the bridge.
You know, story often helps. You had in the book a story about Daniel, who was a 10-year-old, I think, who came in with yeah. his parents, obviously, to get some help. What happened?
Well, this story has happened a bunch of times. I can think of boys and girls where they're very similar, where there's a kid talking to me, and parents are not in the room, just the kid, and the poor kid's crying. I mean, you know, the kid's, you know, kid's not an angel. Kids can, you know, can do some better on some things too. But, that's not what we're talking about at the moment with the kid. And the kid's crying like, oh, hey, kid, why are you upset? And, it has to do with the relationship. And in the couple of situations I'm thinking of, it was a relationship with the dad where the dad, and sometimes at that point I had maybe never met the dad, other times maybe I had, but either way, it all kind of works out the same. The dad had a communication style that was just, you know, like maybe not even always the dad's fault. I know a couple of dads who are just big guys. They just have big, loud voices. You know, like I don't, but, you know, other guys do, right? So sometimes it's that. They just come off as intimidating, or maybe there was a bit of an anger thing. Either way, the kid's just kind of going, whoa, and crying, like because they want to be close to the dad, and they're afraid. I mean, literally the word is afraid. And they would say, I'm afraid. I'm afraid to talk to dad. He's going to get mad. I'm afraid of what he's going to do. Not he's like going to hurt him, but, you know, just anger, an angry response, and kind of an intimidating, loud verbal response. And I can think of a couple times where I would say to the kid, hey, does your dad know that? Well, they're afraid to tell the dad, so of course he doesn't know this, right? And so I said, hey, would you mind if, you know, sometime if I talked to your dad, if I told him this? And they said, no, that's all right. So I did. And I can think of a couple times, one comes to mind particularly, where I, in the nicest way, said, hey, Dad, you got a great kid. And you know, I know. And yeah, well, then I'm, you know, hey, but here's something maybe you don't know. Your boy or girl here, you're not going to believe this. They were crying, and they're afraid to talk to you. And I can think of one particular dad. He was crying. He just didn't know what he was doing. He had no idea. His eyes filled up with tears because I was telling him very nicely, but very straight, you know. And it was the last thing in the world he ever wanted. He did not know.
Right.
And boy, was he ever hit by that. And he wanted to do anything in the universe to fix that up.
Well, that's the good thing.
Mm-hmm. That was great.
A little self-reflection going on here for some of us as we listen to Todd Cartmell on Focus on the Family. Your host is Jim Daly, and the book we're talking about is 8 Simple Tools for Raising Great Kids. We've got that. And as I mentioned, we have a free download of Dr. Cartmell's previous visit with us, all at focusonthefamily.com/radio.
Todd, I don't want that story to get away from us without him or fathers like him. What do you do? How do you want to improve that? You don't want your child to be afraid of you. So what do you do?
Well, the good news is that that's pretty fixable. And this guy did all the right things. And again, a couple of dads I know have done the right things. Well, number one, he listened to that. He understood it. He wasn't mad at his kid. He said, I need to fix this. Keyword, I need to fix this. He started with himself. Yeah. And so we talked about some steps for him. Number one step was for him to immediately address this with his kid and say, hey, I didn't know this was the case. I'm so sorry. And almost, again, like our relationship bridge, I've been hurting our bridge, but I don't want anything to ever get hurt between you. I want you and me to be as close as we can. And I've been making it hard. I'm so sorry. And he just nailed that.
Yeah, so that was good. And that's a good response.
Oh, it's a great response.
What about this one? You know, the teenagers tend to get into this grunt mode, especially boys. I think teen girls, from what I understand, you can jump in here, John, to illuminate us, but because I don't have girls. But, you know, they tend to remain verbal and communicate. Yeah. But when you're the dad of boys or the mom of boys, boys tend to go in one-word explanations. You have a great day at school? Yeah. What'd you do? Nothing. I mean, you know, or can you get this done? I mean, it's that kind of thing. Now, A, what's happening there? I mean, we're often told that boys and girls are exactly the same. It is not true.
Right,
and you
right.
can see it right there in the communication. Girls
sure,
tend not
sure.
to respond that way. Boys do. So why are boys responding that way? How does that trigger the parent to say, okay, now we got a problem?
Yeah.
It may not be a problem. No, it may be personality.
Sure.
But how do you manage it?
I think there are some, you know, some truth in that, you know, some general differences of boys and girls. But I've known plenty of girls who are kind of, you know, just not the most verbal. You know, some are nice and chatty and in general. But yeah, I've known lots of girls who parents wish they talked more and expressed more and kind of hit that teenage years for sure. Well, you know, when I think about it for myself, and I think for a lot of boys this would be the case as well. You know, when they're asked to, you know, just a nice, you know, innocent, you know, caring question about their day or whatnot, and it's certainly on the parent's part, just showing interest and love towards the kid. You know, it's work. Like, it's work for the kid to mentally, you know, recap. I got to think about what I did all day long. I don't even remember what I did all day long. And it's just, it literally takes effort that they would, you know, rather not put into it, really. And so it's not necessarily a relationship problem or anything, but it's just it's easier for them just to give a simpler answer.
Would have been good for you to have been in the car just a couple of days ago. I was talking to my son, 14-year-old, and I asked him a question, and he's like, I don't want to talk. I don't like conversation.
Oh, well, there you go.
And I said, well, this is what people do in the world, but I backed off because my tendency was to kind of go into teach and train mode, and I realized, no, he just doesn't want to.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think depending on the kid, there's different things you can do. You know, you can experiment with different types of questions you can ask. You know, sometimes they'll say, hey, you know, what's one thing you did at recess today? Or who did you sit by at lunch today? Yeah, well, and then you can go, well, play what? Or, you know, you can do multiple choice. Well, did he play on the playground equipment? Did he play a running game, inside, outside? I mean, I do that all the time. It'll just make it easier for him.
Yeah,
to
and sometimes get them to emote is what you want to do. How did you feel when you're out there playing? Was it fun?
Well, good luck with that one. Yeah, maybe that works. The other thing, and this is almost always, it works, but it doesn't, maybe it's not working in your car ride home at the moment. But, you know, kids... even kids who aren't that talkative, they will get a lot more talkative during an activity. You know, so maybe the parent just has to adjust their expectations for that particular kid. This kid, and not always, but during this maybe little phase of life, isn't super talkative right now in this setting. Feels like 20 questions, like a police drill. Okay, well, then maybe I'll have to see, maybe I'll take the pressure off here, and then I'll try a different tack, you know.
Yeah,
maybe.
Well, and moving it to the parent side of this, you know, connecting is key. And kids aren't going to be necessarily gifted at saying, oh, I got to connect with mom or dad.
Right.
They're not thinking that way. That's so it's up to the adult in the room.
Well, it's not their job to be thinking that
and
way.
And in fact, you had a story in the book about 8-year-old Sophia. I know you've changed all these names to protect the kids,
but
Sophia, as she's known, what was that story there with her dad? And this is a common one in terms of connecting.
Yeah, another kind of sad one. This one actually got rectified really quickly. She just was sad again, just missing.
Feeling distance?
Yeah, missing her dad. No negative feelings towards dad. It was just a time thing. Dad had been very busy with his job. Maybe it was a season, and she just really, really felt it. And again, I don't know why, but she just hadn't really. There was no anger. There was no bad relationship between her and her dad, but she hadn't really mentioned it to him, and he wasn't aware. So again, had a chance to chat with dad and let him know. And boy, he just hopped right on it, and he got that thing fixed up. And before you know it, they're doing some camping or whatever. And in both of the stories, this one and the one we spoke of earlier, the one thing that really struck me, and it was really neat, is afterwards, 2 weeks later. This is particularly, it's in Sophia's case as well, but particularly in the case of the where we had the dad with the angry response, it was stunning. The look on the kid, I really don't intend to exaggerate at all, no exaggeration. The look on the kid's face, like a couple weeks later, when these situations had been rectified, I mean, with this one girl who was crying about the intense dad, you should have seen her. She was just smiling. She couldn't smile any bigger. When I asked her how things were with dad, she said, oh, they're great, they're fixed, you know. And she was just, this crying girl was just elated. And the dad really had done a nice job.
Let me ask you this. In your practice, is that sustainable? Do you have those dads or those moms that come back, maybe not 2 weeks later because they're fixing it in the moment, but everybody kind of falls back into their routine?
Yes.
And it's not intentional. It's not mean-spirited. Yeah. But I get busy, and dad's busy, and I'm traveling a lot for my job. And, you know, when I get home, I just need to recharge a bit. I mean, so over the course of 6 months or a year, do these families come back to you to say, we're back in the same spot? Yeah.
Well, is it sustainable? Yes.
Correct. That's the right answer.
Yes. Does everyone sustain it? No. A lot of people do. A lot of people do. And you know what? They do when they are thinking right, when the parents are thinking right, when they're remembering, again, forgive me for being repetitive, but when they're thinking about the bridge. When you're remembering that stuff, it affects everything you do. When you're thinking about, hey, I have lots of lessons I want to teach my kids, but again, I'm not going to teach them anything if our relationship is all blown to smithereens. So like that is number one, and we keep that solid, then a lot of things are possible. And when a parent's remembering that and focusing on that, then all sorts of things are possible and all sorts of good things happen. So for those parents who remember that stuff, they do sustain.
What about this idea of getting into their world? I mean, a lot of people encourage the parents to get into your teen's world or your kid's world. It's easier when they're younger. It's a little more difficult when they're older and they're saying, hey, why are you in my world? But what does it look like, you know, to be in their world to where it's not like stepping on their air hose?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's. You know, it's funny when I hear you say that, Jim, I don't comprehend it as being difficult. I can't figure, I mean, I'm trying to think, well, how could it be difficult? I don't even get how it would be difficult.
Well, busyness, back to that. It can keep you from getting engaged. And you know what? You're not getting cueing from the teen to say, come into my world.
Yeah.
Dad,
yeah.
I'd love you to know more about my friends.
Yeah.
It usually doesn't happen that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, it doesn't happen that way out of the blue.
Right.
That's for sure. And if you haven't been kind of sowing those seeds from beginning, then you know, it may take a little work to get that kicked into gear. But for those of people who are listening now who have younger kids, if you get this stuff on the road now, boy, I tell you, you can...
It'll be a lot healthier.
You don't run into some of these problems, or if you do, they're not as hard, or they're easier to steer around, easier to get through because you've been laying a strong relationship foundation from the beginning. But yeah, getting into your kid's world obviously differs from kid to kid. And, if I had a girl, she'd be into cheerleading. Guess what? I could tell you lots about cheerleading. So kind of whatever the content doesn't matter. And I've just been. Surprised to see a dad or mom who, for whatever reason, I don't always have time to explore it all, just wasn't interested in that, just wasn't doing that.
Yeah.
And they've got, a kid who's got all sorts of things they could get into, and they're just not, and they're the opportunity is just passing them by. And then you're going to end up with a kid who's 14 or 15, 16, and kind of feel, and I've seen this, and it feels like, it's too late. They're hurt enough. They almost don't want you to. And there's still a way to do it, but it's harder. So way easier. And time, Jim, like you were saying, if the intent is there and the motivation there is there, and even if there's some times when you can't be done and it's busy, and well, sure, if the kid knows you care about them and you're trying and you're doing everything you can do, you're fine. There's no problem.
Well, and sometimes that's one of our difficulties. We aim for perfect good is good. Yeah. And Todd, this has been so good, but I've got so many more questions for you here. I think, unfortunately, I got to like a third of them.
Well, yeah.
So let's stick with it and come back next time and speak to parents about these challenges and these opportunities, mm-hmm. as I know you would like to say,
yep.
about how to create that relationship with your child that will last a lifetime.
That's
and
right.
will help them to really have a strong foundation as they move forward. This conversation's really highlighted our desire here at Focus to be in your corner, mom and dad. That's part of it. We want to equip you. We want to give you the tools to do not just a fair job, but a really solid, good job in your parenting. So contact us today, support the ministry, and our way of saying thank you will be to send you a copy of 8 Simple Tools for Raising Great Kids. And this is, again, just full of the right stuff.
And our website is focusonthefamily.com/radio, or call 1-800, the letter A, and the word family. Contribute generously, get a copy of Dr. Cartmell's book and a CD of today's conversation as well. Again, focusonthefamily.com/radio.
Todd, one last thing. The parents who are listening who are going, wow, I just haven't paid attention. It's not a guilt trip. It's just, some things are loose. They're out of control a bit. Maybe you haven't done this. What can that parent do tonight that will be different and begin to change the course of the relationship?
That's almost pretty easy. All the parent has to do in any way that's genuine for them is just to make an effort to connect with their kids, whatever that is. And the kids know, hey, mom and dad is spending some time with me or doing this thing with me. Why? Well, one reason only, because they love me. They want to connect with me. When parents do that by spending time, by increasing physical touch, anything that just builds that relationship, and the kids know it just from their hearts and has only one motive, which is because I love you and I want to be close with you. Yeah. That's where you start.
That is good.
Well, really great advice, and you'll hear more from Dr. Todd Cartmell as we come back next time. Join us then. Meantime, I'm John Fuller, and on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening to Focus on the Family.
When did Christmas stop being about Christmas?
I know, right? Hey, I found the perfect gift for the grandkids this year. The Adventures in Odyssey Club Christmas offer from Focus on the Family.
The Adventures in Odyssey Club?
It's a safe online site for kids with a year's access to every episode, along with Clubhouse Magazine and the new NIRV Adventures in Odyssey Bible, too.
That's a great value.
At a great price.
Order your Adventures in Odyssey Club Christmas offer now through December 15th at witsend.org/Christmas gift.